I want to say one more thing, and that is about ghosts. Hey, John, when my 93-year-old mom died, her 96-year-old sister in Canada was not surprised with the news. My aunt's reaction was, oh, it was her who came to me last night. I felt someone's presence in my room in the middle of the night. It was so strong, I even got up and out of bed. Now I know it was she. A few nights later, I heard light footsteps entering my bedroom as I was just falling asleep, and I decided it was my teenage daughter coming in for something. Aloud, without opening my eyes, I asked, what's up, dear? And I could feel someone right at my side of my bed, and I wondered why she hadn't answered, and I looked up, and my daughter was not there. There was a vague rectangular-ish frame that best described was like a cracked mirror, with my mom's face looking out from behind. Her face was distorted by the cracks. She was not looking at me, but more so into the room. Recognizing it was her, I smiled and thought, how cool. She came to see her sister, and now she came weirdly to see me from beyond. Eric Zorn, your thoughts of this kind of phenomenon. Go.
Hallucination. I don't know. I don't know what to make of these stories.
I don't either. And I'm with you. I don't believe in ghosts. But the problem with us dismissing this is I don't mean to be dismissive of this experience for this person. I get goosebumps reading these things. And I know people are really telling me something they saw or felt. But I don't know that what they saw or felt was real. But I don't want to take away the moment from them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's that way with a lot of supernatural beliefs, right? It's like, why would you want to take that away from someone and tell them that it wasn't true, especially if it gives them comfort? And
yes.
It's like, yeah, I got other things to worry about rather than what people, you know, believe they saw. I know my own experience has nothing like that in it. So maybe I don't know. it's one of those things where you hear about it, you think, well, okay. I can't explain that, but there are a lot of things that I can't explain. And
here's another thing, Eric, pardon me, but if that's true, like if that phenomenon is authentic, then why doesn't it happen more often? Like when I die, I would certainly come. I think I would. I don't want to freak everybody out. And I had a nice run, so I guess there's no point for me to hang around. But I think I would come back and sort of, be helpful or friendly or give a positive feeling to people. But how many billions of people have lived on this earth? This should be happening millions of times a day.
And that's a very good point. And of course, the other question is, well, if there are ghosts, what are they doing in the 999% of the time that they're not haunting someone? And what are they? What's the purpose of them? They're just hanging around, looking at things, watching things. I mean, we don't know because they could be all over the place and just inert. Maybe only a few of them occasionally have the ability to manifest themselves. I don't know, but you're right. If this were actually real, you'd expect it to be happening all the time to all of us because we all have hundreds of ancestors, right? So
I wouldn't be above, though, coming back and telling my kids what the lottery number was going to be or something like that.
That would just ruin them, John.
Well, put it this way. If any of my late ancestors are out there listening right now, you can do me a solid. I won't judge. Feel free to give me any advantage in the corporeal world, if you don't mind. Speaking of which, Donald Trump was serving hamburgers out a window of a McDonald's the other day. And Eric, I'm a little confounded by the stunts that we ask our politicians to perform. If J.D. Vance was awkward at an ice cream shop or Donald Trump was terrific pushing burgers out a window at a McDonald's that was closed, I almost fault us as a society, as a voting public, for asking them to do this. What's your reaction to these kinds of things?
Well, the thing is it Cooks County, Pennsylvania, where he was, they closed a McDonald's so that he could cosplay being a McDonald's worker and serve fake customers for a short time. It struck me as such a strange stunt. She was trying to troll Kamala Harris, of course, to suggest that she had not actually worked a summer at McDonald's back when she was in college. which is an insanely small issue to deal with. Even if she's making that up, it's a really small issue, but there's no evidence that she is making it up. There's no evidence that she was working there, I guess, other than her say-so, because who keeps their pay stubs from 41 years ago from their part-time summer job? But we're drawn to these one-off stories. We're drawn to Donald Trump rambling about Arnold Palmer's penis and things like that are not relevant particularly. And then some bigger thing comes along, like some of the top leaders in Trump's administration saying that he's completely unfit to be a president again, and then that he's a budding fascist. And we don't pay much attention to that, but we talk all about, whether he's actually serving real customers at a drive-through window.
Yeah. I think it flirts with the likability issue. It must convey some information to some people in some way. I get your point, but then why do they do it, Eric?
Well, I'm not sure that Trump thinks these things through carefully.
But Kamala Harris and the Democrats are not above it either, but go ahead.
Right, they're not, but I don't think they've been doing things that are quite as transparent as this phony McDonald's stint that he did. I mean, if he actually had gone to McDonald's sort of undercover boss style and actually worked and actually served real customers, it might have been something. It would have been a little interesting, and it's certainly an attention-getting stunt. But I think it's calling attention, in my mind, it's calling attention to the smallness of the attacks that he has against Kamala Harris. He referred to her as retarded a few weeks ago, which is a word we don't even use anymore. It's considered offensive. And he also used another word the other day that we can't say on WGN radio to describe her vice presidency. Just openly profane in a way that not that long ago would have been completely disqualifying for
And some of this only 2 weeks from the election. But then let me ask you this. I don't know if that McDonald's restaurant was a company-owned store. They've come out and said, we're neither blue nor red. We're golden. We invite everybody in, Democrats, Republicans. And I guess that's the safest lane for McDonald's to take. But if that were a corporate-owned store, I think an even safer lane would have been, no, you can't do a campaign stop or stunt here. Obviously, somebody allowed that. I wonder what the best course for McDonald's would have been in this case.
Well, if they want to remain neutral in a presidential election, which I think is a smart move for most corporations, they just would have said, no, we don't do that at our store. And we're not going to close down our store for your stunt or our restaurant for your stunt. That struck me as really unwise. And I guess you're right. It was a franchise owner who did this, not the corporation. But I think the corporation did sign off on it and has not distanced itself from that. It's just a lousy idea, and especially when you've got an electorate that's so incredibly polarized that people who hate Trump hate him, people who love him love him. But if you're going to go out and appear to stake out a position, any store, if Home Depot or Lowe's or any store, Target decided they were going to host a campaign event, shut down their store and host a campaign event for any candidate for president these days, it would be considered to be highly partisan and offensive to many, many customers.
One issue that surfaced in that was then they were asking about minimum wage, and Kamala Harris seized on that and said the federal minimum wage, I think, is $7.75, and therefore if you worked at that restaurant for the federal minimum wage for a year, you would be at the poverty level. I don't think anybody working at a McDonald's is getting $7.75. I wish she would have nuanced her observation with that fact. If the federal minimum wage is $7.75, you're working at McDonald's in Chicago, you're getting $15 an hour. I'd be interested. If you are working at a fast food place or a fast casual place, if you work at Panera or Burger King, text in to me, 312-981-7200, what do you earn? The point being that I think the federal minimum wage is kind of a moot point, don't you, Eric?
No, I don't. Not everywhere, certainly. I mean, Chicago, yes, is a higher minimum wage, but it's one of the progressive values is raising the minimum wage around the country and to have it keep pace with inflation, which it has.
But I'm sorry. Do you think are people working for? Boy, this is naive. I haven't worked for an hourly wage in a long time. Are people making $7.75 an hour behind the counter at restaurants?
In rural Pennsylvania, they might well be. It depends, of course. Right now, they have a labor shortage in a lot of places. I'm not sure they do. Where that particular store was, but there are a lot of places where they're having to raise their compensation packages because they can't get workers.
I'd be surprised if there's people in Illinois making less than $10 an hour, unless it's a tipped wage and it's coming out to $15 an hour. It just seems to me like that struck me as kind of a poor comeback in her case. I always want the candidates, when they're trying to score a point, like Donald Trump is trolling Kamala Harris working at a McDonald's. The undercover boss thing can be very telling. If he did it for 8 hours or 40 hours, you really would have learned what life is like for those people, at least in their work environment. But then she comes back and says, well, the minimum wage is $7.75. And I thought, yeah, but help me out a little bit here, Kamala, because I don't think that is as true as you're making it sound. I know that's the wage, but that's not the wage at which people live. But she didn't care to do that because she's running for office. So.
Yeah, but the minimum wage, raising the minimum wage is a progressive democratic value. And so that's what Harris decided to highlight. And I think what she's trying to do is show that she's actually on the side of those, you know, fry cooks and counter people and people who staff the drive-through window, that they're not making much money. And she thinks they should make more, that the wealth of this country, that the commerce should be benefiting these people more than it is. And that's the lane that she's trying to take. Trump is simply taking that position, you know, at the window and at the frying station to illustrate that his skepticism about Kamala Harris's
working at a restaurant at all like that.
Job. And I, you know, I wrote today in my newsletter about, I think, you know, I had a job when I was a kid working as a dishwasher at the Jolly Tiger restaurant in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I can't prove it. I can't prove it to anybody. I don't have any pay stubs. I didn't keep pay stubs. I never put it on my resume when I applied for journalism jobs. I had a bunch of little jobs, and I'm sure you did too. You know, you grow up, you're making a little bit of money here, making a little bit of money there for a few months, and then you go off.
I'll bet my first resume included sludge pump operator in West Joliet. At the water filtration plant, I operated the sludge pump for a summer, paid me serious coin. And that's interesting, though. I mean, who didn't lie on their resume once upon a time? Eric Zorn, I don't even know if I introduced you well, is the publisher of something called the Picayune Sentinel. It is a weekly newsletter you can get for free. If you email ericzorn@gmail.com, you may remember his face, voice, and writing from the Chicago Tribune when he was a longtime columnist there. He's a member of our Mincing Rascals podcast panel. Eric, I opined earlier about the City Council Safety Committee that wants to reduce the speed limit. 8-5, they voted to send it to the full council, maybe next year. Reduce the speed limit in Chicago 30-25. I'm against it. Where are you on that?
I am skeptical of the value of it, although there have been a number of peer cities, as they call them, Seattle, San Francisco, Minneapolis, Portland, Atlanta, where they have cut their speed limits and reduced crashes and pedestrian deaths on the streets by, you know, recognizable percentages. So I get the impulse to do it. I wonder, though, what some of the other long-term effects of it, whether it's going to cause, you know, people driving more and more traffic jams, people taking longer to get to work, just the effect it's going to have on people. I'd like to hear more. I'd like to hear more about what some of these other cities who try this have experienced. There are too many people going too fast on side streets, for sure, but I don't know that when you look at these pedestrian deaths and crashes, how many of them are related to high speed. I'm really curious about the cause and effect here, and where these accidents are happening, and what might have other factors might have been into play. It doesn't strike me. You know, why are you against it? Is it just that you don't like the man telling you how fast to drive, or?
Because I understand that you are more likely to survive a crash if you're hit by a car when it's doing 25 than 30. But I don't think that the reason that people are running into people is because they're going too fast. It's because they're distracted. And if the speed limit difference between the posted limit and, say, the speed camera is 6 miles an hour, you're going to go 25, now 30. So 31 miles an hour in the city is going to get me a ticket. I don't think that's a fair trade. I don't think if like we want to protect every single life, nobody's ever going to die because they got hit by a car in Chicago. We're going to need to make the speed limit 2, you know, that and even that wouldn't work because people would still go fast.
Yes, there was some talk in Mayor Johnson's transition plan of lowering the speed limit on some of these side streets way down to like 10 miles an hour. So it's you're right. You could make sure that nobody ever drove on the interstate faster than 45. You'd save a lot of lives, but there are lots of trade-offs, and that's really what I'm interested in exploring more. And that's why I'm glad they postponed this. I'm glad they're going to have some hearings about it.
Yeah.
I'm still open-minded about it. I don't think it's going to cramp my style, particularly driving around the city if I have to go 25 instead of 30. But it's one of those issues where when I first hear about it, my reaction is, don't do that to me. And then I think, well, let me think about it. Let me think this through. Let me listen to the folks.
Yeah. Okay. Less than a minute left, and I just want to read some of the texts that have come in. We're talking about fast food workers and the federal minimum wage. John, my daughter works in Nashville, fast food restaurant. She gets paid $8.25. Another one, John, my daughter works as a receptionist for a realtor, $8.25, and got laid off during COVID. John, $7.75 is reality for me and many I know. John, my son's a fast food busser at Cooper Hawks. No tips. He gets $16 an hour. Panera and Joliet were making $16.25 after 6 months. And about, can Kamala Harris prove that she worked at a McDonald's one day? I then told the story about working at a water filtration plant. And Steve said, hey, John, you remember working at the plant, but prove it to us. And no, I couldn't. I take your point. Eric, you and I will make some points on the Mincing Rascals podcast tomorrow. And if folks want to get your newsletter, just email ericzorn@gmail.com. Sound good?
Thanks. It's great, John. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to it. I hope you check out our podcast. It's called The Mincing Rascals.